Welcome back. It's so good to have you with us again. Yes, you, our resident learner. Whatever it is you're doing right now, whether you're prepping for a big meeting or commuting or just tuning in because you are insanely curious about how the world works behind the scenes, you are in exactly the right place. Today, we are taking a deep dive into a world that most of us never really see, but one that is absolutely crucial to keeping modern civilization running. We're talking about the hidden, highly engineered world of heavy-duty vehicle lighting in the mining and agriculture industries.
It is an incredibly demanding environment. I mean, the subject matter we have today really opens your eyes to just how complex and really unforgiving these operations are. We tend to take lighting for granted in our daily lives, you know. But out there, it is an entirely different science.
Oh, absolutely. And before we get going, I want to mention that today's insights come to us from a detailed technical breakdown provided by Farison. They are a company that specializes in these exact extreme environment systems. Their documentation frames the mission of this deep dive perfectly. We're going to explore how lighting on these massive machines is not just some convenient feature so the driver can see where they're going. It's a critical, highly integrated operational safety system.
That distinction is paramount. When we think of vehicle lighting, we typically think of our daily commute down a paved, nicely illuminated highway. In heavy industry, lighting is a foundational safety net that prevents catastrophic accidents and keeps the entire site functioning.
Okay, let's unpack this. I want you to just imagine for a second that you are the operator of a massive piece of machinery. We are talking about a mining haul truck the size of a two-story house, where just the tires are 12 feet tall.
Massive machines.
Right, massive. And it's midnight. You are either a mile deep underground in a confined mine shaft, or you're out navigating a massive, dusty agricultural field during a harvest. There are no streetlights, there's no ambient city glow reflecting off the clouds. It is pitch. Absolute black. If your lighting system fails or even just underperforms, the stakes aren't just a minor inconvenience or missing a turn. We are talking about a matter of life and death.
The environmental challenges these machines are up against are relentless. The source material outlines conditions where natural visibility is almost entirely compromised. You have continuous night shifts spanning 12 hours or more. You have enclosed underground working areas where the darkness is absolute and oppressive.
And the dust, I imagine.
Exactly. Add to that thick, blinding dust from the excavation, airborne particulate matter swirling around the vehicle, deep mud, uneven, constantly changing terrain, and multiple other massive machines operating in incredibly close proximity.
It sounds like a literal nightmare scenario for visibility. The dust alone, I can just picture trying to look through a thick, abrasive cloud of dirt hanging in the air. And that brings us to the first major layer of safety, which is the actual beam patterns. I imagine you can't just slap a giant, excessively bright bulb on the front of a tractor or a mining haul truck and call it a day.
Doing that would actually create a massive hazard. The Farison breakdown explicitly details the what and the why of beam patterns. Specifically, it highlights the critical difference between spot lighting and flood lighting, and why specifying the correct one for the intended task is vital to operator safety. Let's look at spot beams first.
Okay.
These provide long-range focused illumination. They're primarily designed for vehicle travel paths, haul roads, and forward navigation. The whole point of a spot beam is to punch a tight corridor of light far into the distance, allowing the operator to identify obstacles much further ahead and anticipate changes in the terrain before they're right on top of them.
That makes perfect sense for forward momentum, giving you that distance vision so you don't drive an 800-ton truck off a ledge. But these machines aren't just driving from point A to point B, they are actively working. They have buckets, they have massive harvesting attachments, and they are loading material into other trucks.
And that is where flood beams come into play. Flood beams provide wide area dispersed illumination. They are suited for the immediate work zones around the vehicle. Think loading areas where excavators are dropping tons of rock, or the massive agricultural implements tearing up the soil right behind a tractor. What's fascinating here is the sheer danger of incorrect beam selection.
What happens if they use the wrong one?
Well, if a fleet manager or an engineer relies solely on spot beams, they are going to leave the immediate work area entirely in the dark. The operator won't be able to see the very load they are carrying or the harvester attachment operating just a few feet away.
I'm trying to visualize the reverse scenario too. If they just flood the entire area with massive wide-angle lights everywhere, that has to ruin their forward visibility on the haul routes. It makes me think of an analogy. It is exactly like driving your car through a thick, heavy fog at night. If you panic and turn on your bright high beams thinking, I just need more light, you actually completely blind yourself.
Right, the glare.
Exactly. All that intense light just hits the water droplets in the fog and bounces right back into your eyes, creating a glaring white wall. It isn't about just having more light. It's about having the right kind of light cutting through the environment.
That's a perfect way to put it. The source notes that excessive floodlighting creates that exact same kind of blinding white wall effect on a dusty or foggy hall route. A properly designed lighting layout demands a highly strategic combination of both patterns. The operator has to be able to clearly see distance hazards coming up using the spot beams while simultaneously monitoring their nearby work zones and heavy implements using the flood beams, all without the light reflecting off the airborne dust and blinding them.
Which brings up something from the research that honestly blew my mind. When we talk about poor lighting, my first thought is simply, okay, you might bump into something. But the source points out a deeply hidden physiological danger, which is operator fatigue. Bad lighting actually physically exhausts the human body over the course of a shift.
The mechanics behind it are a critical safety issue that often goes overlooked. When lighting is poorly specified, or even just incorrectly positioned, the operator's brain and eyes are forced to constantly compensate. They're fighting to see through poor visibility, dealing with harsh shadows, or squinting against misplaced glare reflecting off the dirt. Over the course of a long, continuous shift, often 10 to 14 hours, this takes a massive physical toll.
Just from trying to see.
Yes. The source documents a cascade of effects. It starts with increased eye strain, which quickly leads to slower hazard recognition.
Because your brain is spending so much energy just trying to decode the visual noise, right?
Yeah.
You are using up your cognitive battery just to figure out what you are looking at.
The processing power of the human brain is being wasted on the basic act of seeing. This dramatically reduces the operator's overall situational awareness. Ultimately, this results in a much faster onset of physical and mental fatigue. In mining operations, for instance, where these machines run continuously across multiple shifts, day and night, this rapid cognitive fatigue significantly increases the likelihood of catastrophic operator error.
The source gave a really visceral example of this that stuck with me. It talked about how uneven lighting creates these deep, dark shadows on the ground, and those shadows can completely obscure a massive boulder or a deep depression in a haul road. So the operator is tense, gripping the wheel, sweating, trying to constantly interpret if that dark patch 50 feet ahead is just a harmless shadow from a floodlight or a trench that is going to swallow their wheel and roll the vehicle.
The solution to this, as outlined in the technical breakdown, is consistent and evenly distributed illumination. When the lighting is uniform around the working area, with smooth transitions between the light and dark zones, the operator doesn't have to strain to interpret the terrain. Their brain can relax its visual processing.
They can just trust their eyes.
Right. They can maintain their focus, stay physically looser in the cab, and react significantly faster to actual physical hazards.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because everything we have talked about so far is just about the operator being able to see out of the cab. But the discussion in the source completely shifts gears to an equally critical concept, seeing versus being seen. It is not just about the driver seeing the road. It is fundamentally about the massive machine being highly visible to everyone else in the environment.
That pivot in the safety strategy is crucial. Operational safety depends heavily on equipment visibility. You have to remember that mining and agricultural work sites are essentially choreographed chaos. You have multiple massive machines, excavators, loaders, dozers, haul trucks, operating within the same confined areas. Clear machine visibility is what reduces the risk of vehicle-to-vehicle collisions.
Because if I am driving a giant haul truck, I need to know where the other giant haul trucks are long before we cross paths.
And that early recognition is what prevents a minor misunderstanding in a tunnel from becoming a multi-ton collision. Effective lighting gives surrounding workers immediate awareness of the machine's direction and its movement. It makes equipment operating near ground personnel distinctly visible. In underground mining, you have these incredibly confined, winding haul routes cut through solid rock. There is virtually no room for error or sudden evasive maneuvers.
It's just a tight rock tunnel.
Exactly. So the lighting system casting a glow around a blind corner is often the only way an operator can detect an approaching vehicle early enough to pull into a turnout safely.
It is not just deep underground either. The source brought up the agricultural side, which takes this massive machinery hazard right out into the public sphere. You have these massive, slow-moving agricultural machines, harvesters, tractors pulling massive implements, and they frequently have to travel between fields on public or rural roads. Mm-hmm. Imagine coming around a bend on a dark country road at 55 miles an hour. You need to instantly identify that there's a slow-moving, massive piece of machinery taking up the entire lane ahead of you.
That early identification is everything.
Yeah, their adequate lighting is what ensures other drivers can identify them quickly, understand their scale, and adjust their speed and time to avoid a catastrophic rear-end collision.
It all comes down to providing that critical reaction time.
Mm.
Clear equipment visibility improves the overall site safety, whether that site is an underground tunnel, an open pit mine, or a public rural road crossing.
I'm trying to picture the hardware required for all of this. Are these just heavy-duty versions of the headlights on my pickup truck, or are we talking about a totally different kind of architecture? Because the environmental torture these systems endure, as outlined in the source, sounds like engineering for the apocalypse.
It is a completely different beast. If you put a standard automotive headlight on a mining drill, it would likely shatter on the first shift. The abuse these electrical systems take is staggering. The Ferrison text explicitly lists the conditions: continuous, bone-rattling vibration, constant bombardment by abrasive rock dust and fine particulate matter, high-pressure water ingress from heavy rain or intense equipment washdowns, massive temperature variations from freezing nights to scorching operating temperatures, and extended non-stop operating hours.
So you really can't just screw a standard bulb into a plastic housing and hope for the best?
Not at all. To survive this environment, the engineering must address what we could call the holy trinity of durability. The first pillar of that trinity is vibration-resistant mounting. A piece of heavy equipment is essentially a giant rolling vibration generator. The engine block, the tracks, the digging implements, they all send shockwaves through the chassis. If the lighting mounts aren't specifically engineered with dampening materials to isolate the fixture from those frequencies, the continuous shaking causes mounting bolts to loosen, the metal brackets to suffer metal fatigue and snap, and the delicate internal components of the light to literally vibrate apart.
That's insane.
The source notes that poor mounting design is actually a leading cause of premature lighting failure in mining machinery.
So the light itself might be perfectly functional, but the bracket fails and it just vibrates right off the side of the machine into the mud. What is the second part of the durability trinity?
Ingress protection. The housings, the lenses, and the connectors have to be completely hermetically sealed. If fine rock dust or water gets inside, whether from a dusty agricultural field or a high-pressure maintenance washdown, it immediately causes corrosion on the circuit boards, internal condensation on the lens that blocks the light, and electrical short circuits. Once contamination breaches the housing, the light's failure is imminent. And the third crucial engineering consideration, which surprises many people, is thermal management.
That is surprising. I think most people assume LED lights are inherently cool to the touch, unlike those old halogen or incandescent bulbs that would burn your hand if you touched the glass.
It is a very common misconception. While the beam of light projecting forward from an LED doesn't carry infrared heat like an incandescent bulb, the LED semiconductor itself generates intense heat at its base. The heat radiates backward into the electronic drivers. If that intense heat isn't actively drawn away from the components through heavy-duty aluminum heat sinks and proper thermal design, the physics of the LED start to work against it.
It cooks itself.
Literally. The light output will rapidly degrade over time, growing dimmer and dimmer, and those electronic drivers will bake themselves and fail prematurely. Effective heat dissipation is what guarantees consistent performance over thousands of hours of service life.
That is a brilliant breakdown. The heat goes backward, not forward. So you have these heavily armored, vibration-proof, heat-dissipating, fully sealed fixtures, and then you have to mount them strategically. The layout of a heavily armored machine is fascinating. The source breaks it down into four distinct zones. You have the forward work lights, which provide that long-distance spot illumination for driving and navigating the haul routes. Then you have side lighting, which uses the flood beams to provide visibility when operating implements, loading material, or servicing the sides of the vehicle.
Don't forget rear lighting. This is vital for assisting with reversing operations, which is statistically one of the most dangerous maneuvers in heavy machinery, and it vastly improves the visibility and safety for any ground personnel who might be working behind the equipment.
Mm.
Finally, you have area lighting, which is utilized specifically when the machine is shut down for maintenance or repair in low-light environments.
You still need to be able to see clearly when you are turning a wrench or changing a hydraulic hose out in the dark. The placement has to be carefully mapped out to make sure the entire operational envelope is visible, without accidentally creating new glare spots off the hood of the machine or throwing harsh shadows into the work zone. So, what does this all mean? We have the right beam patterns, we have the strategic placement, and we have indestructible, apocalypse-proof fixtures. But there is still one more piece to the puzzle that actually makes the lights turn on.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, we realize that a light is really only as good as the system powering it. The final core concept, the source details, is that lighting must be deeply integrated into the vehicle's entire electrical architecture. We can call it the nervous system of the machine. You can have the most beautifully engineered, indestructible light fixture in the world, but it'll perform terribly if that nervous system is failing. The text dives deep into four technical pillars for these system-level considerations.
Let's walk through those four pillars, because it sounds like this is where the real unseen engineering happens. If the fixtures are bulletproof, what is actually causing these systems to fail out in the field?
The first pillar is voltage stability. Heavy machinery is incredibly large, which necessitates extremely long electrical cable runs from the batteries and alternators to the lighting fixtures mounted way out on the extremities of the boom or the chassis. If the copper conductors inside those cables are undersized to the length of the run, you experience a phenomenon called voltage drop.
It loses power along the way.
Yes. By the time the electricity reaches the light, the voltage is too low to power it effectively. That translates directly to significantly reduced light output and distracting flickering for the operator.
And a flickering light in your peripheral vision for 12 hours straight ties right back into causing that massive cognitive fatigue we talked about earlier. Okay, so that is the power getting there. What is the second pillar of this nervous system?
The second pillar is harness protection. Since the entire machine is vibrating violently and articulating at various pivot points, the wiring harnesses themselves are in constant physical danger. The cables carrying the power are exposed to continuous abrasion and mechanical movement against the steel frame of the vehicle. If they aren't properly routed away from pinch points and wrapped in heavy-duty protective sleeving, the vibration will slowly rub the plastic insulation away, exposing the bare copper wire. The moment the bare wire touches the metal chassis, you have a severe electrical fault or a dead short.
The machine literally chafes its own wiring to death. I imagine the connection points where those wires actually plug into the light fixture are just as vulnerable.
They are, which brings us to the third pillar, sealed connectors. We discussed the hermetically sealed housings for the lights themselves, but the physical connection point where the wiring harness meets the light is a major weak point. Moisture and ultrafine dust have an incredible ability to work their way into tiny crevices. If those connectors aren't rated for heavy washdowns, water will seep in and cause rapid corrosion on the metal pins. That leads to intermittent false lights, flickering on and off every time the machine hits a bump, and eventually causes premature system failure due to high electrical resistance.
And the final technical pillar of this electrical architecture.
The final pillar is grounding integrity. It seems incredibly basic, but it is often the most overlooked aspect of a vehicle's electrical system. Think of the electrical system like plumbing. The power wire from the battery is the faucet pushing the water out to the light, but the ground wire is the drain bringing that electricity back to the source to complete the circuit. If the drain is clogged, or in this case, if the ground wire is poorly connected to a vibrating, rusty, or painted chassis, the power backs up. A poor ground connection will completely disrupt the system, leading to erratic light operation, dimming, and flickering.
That plumbing analogy perfectly illustrates it. You can have all the water pressure in the world, but if the drain is blocked, the sink just overflows and stops working. If the machine's basic electrical foundation isn't stable, the sophisticated safety lighting simply cannot do its job.
It emphasizes one central point that Ferrison makes clear. Treating lighting as a deeply integrated part of the vehicle's electrical architecture is the only way to ensure system reliability and simplify maintenance down the road. It cannot be treated as an aftermarket accessory or an afterthought.
This has been such an eye-opening exploration into something so seemingly simple, yet incredibly complex. To summarize the core takeaway for you listening today, lighting in the extreme worlds of agriculture and mining is not about just bolting a bright flashlight to the hood of a tractor. It is a highly engineered, deeply integrated safety net. getting the beam patterns right to see the road and the work area, fighting off relentless vibration with dampening mounts, sealing out the hard environment, managing the intense backward heat of LEDs, and maintaining a flawless electrical nervous system. All of this reduces operator fatigue, prevents catastrophic collisions, and ultimately keeps these massive work sites running safely through the darkest nights.
It is a critical operational safety system, in every sense of the word, requiring a massive amount of hidden engineering to function reliably.
And I want to give a quick source credit before we wrap up. For anyone who might be dealing with these exact extreme operational challenges or looking to upgrade a fleet's safety systems, the experts at Farrison, who provided the incredibly detailed technical breakdown for today's deep dive, can be reached directly. Their contact info from the document is 013-661-5020, or you can email them at sales@farrison.com.
This raises an important question. As we move toward a future of remote-controlled or even fully autonomous mining and agricultural machinery, will the advanced camera systems and sensors of tomorrow's robots rely on these exact same rigorous lighting principles to see their environment? Or will artificial intelligence be forced to fight the very same deep shadows, blinding glare, and abrasive dust that human operators battle today?
A brilliant and slightly intimidating question to leave off on. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep learning, stay curious, and we will catch you next time.